Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
In the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. In case you missed any of this program, it is available on iTunes. Search and subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Get the show automatically sent to you each and every week.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi. Well, I have an affinity for your name, of course, because I did the book on the hockey sticks and the history of the hockey sticks and how the curve stick came into being in the first place.
Do you want to give us a quick rundown on that?
Well, you know, I think anybody who had wood sticks back in the 40s and 30s will tell you that sticks used to naturally curve because of the humidity and stuff. Nobody wanted them to curve, but they did inadvertently. And then, of course, the famous story, depending on who you believe, it's either Stan Mikita or Andy Bathgate who puts the first curve in the stick. And, of course, Stan's story is great, that he broke his stick at practice one day. He broke the blade, but he didn't break it all the way through. The blade sort of had a bit of a curve in it, and he started shooting with it. And he realized the things that a curved blade could do. So steamed the stick, put it under the door, bent the blade, and he and Bobby Hull went out and started shooting rockets. And, you know, that changed hockey. And people don't understand it, but that changed hockey, you know, like 1,000 times. It's mm-hmm. one of the biggest things in changing how hockey was played, because goalies couldn't compete anymore. They had to have a better equipment. Coaches had to coach better defense. You name it. The curve in the hockey stick was a huge thing.
Well, there you go. That's a little bit interesting. Thanks for that, Bruce. Bruce, we have you on to talk about the new U.S. television deal and, of course, the coverage of the NHL playoffs so far. Let's start with the U.S. TV contract. 10 years, $2 billion. Is that the best the NHL could have hoped to get?
Well, you know, when you consider that NBC maybe gets 1% of American households watching hockey versus gets maybe 0.06 households watching hockey in America, it's just not a huge sport on that level. It's a niche sport. It has a very loyal audience. The demographic is great. The kind of people who watch hockey spend a lot of money. Advertisers like them. But at the end of the day, you're talking about real numbers here. I think when you're assessing the value of this contract, it's more important, though, to sort of say, well, where are the digital rights going to be in 10 years? Well, you know, is the NHL giving away something they don't know how great it'll be for 10 years? Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest question people have, is that maybe if the NHL had been able to hang on to its digital rights, that might have been the most lucrative part of the business. But to get a deal with NBC Comcast, they had to do it, and that's where we are today.
Bruce, what is the downside to the NHL not being on ESPN and the upside to being on the new NBC Sports Channel, which was obviously formerly Versus, and basically having that entire platform to yourself?
Well, ESPN gives you the stamp of legitimacy in the United States. There's no doubt about it, but I think, whatever, it's been since 2005 now, that they haven't been on ESPN, so hockey fans are used to it. I mean, it's not a great deal. I think you guys can maybe remember before the lockout, when you'd walk to an airport or a hotel lobby in the United States, ESPN would be on. There'd be a hockey game, or they'd be talking hockey. Mm-hmm. That kind of promotion the NHL has really missed. But I think people have kind of considered it and taken it into account, and the hockey fans know where to find hockey now. The NBC Comcast deal is a huge broadcast deal in the States. For people who don't know, in Winnipeg, Comcast is one of the largest cable outfits, maybe the largest cable outfit in the United States. They also own channels. Their marriage with NBC, the content of the two together, is a huge deal. So you're going to see the Versus channel renamed, probably something like NBC Sports Channel, and you're going to see that, you know, the legitimacy of NBC brings some new eyeballs to the sport. And so in that respect, I think it's a good deal for the league.
Bruce, how big of a factor was Ed Snyder in this contract?
Well, Ed Snyder, of course, has been the chairman of Comcast in the past, one of the guys who got the thing started at this level. Look, there's no doubt that when Gary Bettman had his little hissy fit with ESPN and got mad at them after the lockout, right, that Ed Snyder was there basically, here, Gary, run into my arms here with Comcast and we'll help you out. He's been very important. He's been very important in pushing this deal. Also, Bettman has known the NBC chairman of sports, Dick Ebersole, for a long time. So between those two guys, I think this deal was in the bag a long time ago. I know that they considered other networks. I know what ESPN bid. I know that Fox looked at it. I know that Truth TV looked at it. But at the end of the day, when you consider the connection that Bettman has with both Snyder and with Ebersole, I think this thing was a slam dunk going to NBC Comcast.
We're joined on the line by Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. Now, Bruce, shortly thereafter, on the heels of the U.S. television contract, is going to be the Canadian television rights, and that's up in 2014.
Yep.
And it's a time when the TV market for sports in Canada has never been as competitive.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to sort of, you know, look into your fortune-telling skills. And what do you think the NHL can expect to get in 2014 in the Canadian TV contract, and from whom?
Well, right now, CBC has the rights, and they pay about $100 million a year. And then there are subcontracting contracts that go to both Sportsnet and to TSN. Right now, the thing that's driving, that's going to drive the Canadian bidding, is the fact that all the telecommunications companies, so we're talking Rogers, Bell, TELUS, and Shaw, all of them are looking at sports as a way to market their brands for both cell phones, and also cable and satellite TV. This is a huge corporate battle that's going on in Canada amongst these three or four different large companies. And they're looking at sports as a way to get their message out, the best way to get their message out. And they don't mind spending maybe more money than it's worth on the NHL contract. They can amortize that against some of their other business. They feel nothing gives them a higher profile in Canada than the NHL and having the NHL rights. So you are going to see a very vigorous bidding. I would not be surprised if we see the dollar figure per year in the Canadian contract be even more than the American one.
Wow.
Both CBC and TSN have their own unique way of covering the playoffs. What do you like about each network's coverage, and what area do you think they can improve the most?
Well, I mean, CBC's strength is also its biggest weakness. It's tradition, it's pedigree, it's technical superiority in many cases. It's always their strength. I mean, when you throw Bob Cole out there and you get that voice going on a great hockey game, there's nothing can beat it. I think their announcers are perhaps the best. I think the best twosome right now is probably Jim Houston and Craig Simpson. The problem for CBC is you can always tell CBC, but you can't tell them much. They have an idea that they're the best and that everything they do is right, and they're very slow to change things. And obviously, they've been playing the Ron and Don show for a long time. It's starting to show its age a little bit. I think it's time to start grooming somebody to succeed Don in this package, but they don't seem to be doing that. The thing about CBC going forward, too, is to sort of sidetrack it just a little bit, is it's highly unlikely that CBC is going to be able to afford to have the contract the next time around. So we may be seeing the last couple of years of Hockey Night in Canada on CBC, the way things are going. For TSN, I mean, TSN, they're not particularly adventurous, but they're very ambitious. They have a lot of ideas. I think James Duffy is a really good host. I think mm-hmm. he's really come into his own. They have good panelists, but I think they have too many panelists. They have too many people rotating in and out, so I think it hurts their consistency. Their game coverage is really good. Of course, they're the ones who inaugurated the one guy upstairs and one guy downstairs. I think that's been very effective. Guys like Pierre and Ray Ferraro, I think, are really good when they work between the benches. So I like TSN. They still haven't got that pedigree. They still haven't stepped it up and got that one big star that you want to turn on for like you do with Don or Ron. That hasn't happened yet. Now, it may be deliberate, too, with TSN. They're not a network that necessarily wants to create big stars, but I would say that that's their biggest strength and their biggest weakness at TSN.
It's interesting there. Bruce, going back to the NBC deal for a second, you wrote an interesting piece about, people were wondering what exactly the stipulations were of the U.S. television deal, should Phoenix and Atlanta leave. And you said that, NBC was assuming the risk that if they left, that the contract wouldn't change. Just a question about that. People talk about those two markets all the time, but how much of a share of the market did they get when national games were on? And secondly, it seemed like, at least to me, that Atlanta and Phoenix were never on national television anyways.
Well, we're talking about the potential. If you have a winning team in Atlanta, a successful team in Atlanta, that's the number seven TV media market in the United States. If you've got a successful team there locally, it can be very profitable. It can be very, very profitable, and it can help bring people to the network. Same thing with Phoenix. Unfortunately, both teams have been losers the last decade, and we really haven't seen anything out of either of them to give the local folks anything to be excited about. So we're talking about the loss of potential here as opposed to the loss of the real numbers that they're bringing to the network. But that was a huge admission to find out that there was certainly no give backs on behalf of the NHL to NBC if they lost those markets. And, it's more a pride thing at this point than anything to not have those markets. But, again, if Phoenix or Atlanta or both were top six teams or top eight teams in the league, they would be substantial markets, and they would help to drive the national market a lot more than they do now.
See, we in the studio, Bruce, thought last week that it was somewhat of a sign of the writing on the wall in Phoenix when the NHL scheduled a game that started at 10 a.m. last Saturday in Phoenix. Did you read anything into that?
I think that's mostly TV, but they would be the easiest market to mess around with if you know
right.
what I mean.
Right.
There's certainly less pushback. The most important thing there is the Detroit market. I mean, they're trying to please Detroit. They want that game on at the right time in Detroit. That's where they're going to get their numbers from. So, if Phoenix were a powerful team, a top six team, and their owner and general manager really respected guys within the league, that probably would have never happened. But this was all to placate Detroit. People joke that NBC, they don't need the whole league. All they need are like five teams because that's all they ever show. Mm-hmm. Detroit, Philadelphia, Chicago, the Rangers. You can basically fill in, and the Devils, you can basically fill in the number of teams that they're going to put on their network. Nobody right. else seems to get on.
Exactly. Yeah.
They have the potential for the other teams, but certainly those are the ones they only put on in the regular season.
Bruce, we'll let you go on this final question. Assuming that the NHL returns to Winnipeg next season, do you expect to see a bidding war for the local rights to Winnipeg Jets broadcasts?
Well, I mean, the problem for the TV rights, at least, I don't know, I can't speak to the radio rights, but the problem for the TV rights is that Sportsnet basically has most of those rights. Where are they going to fit this in? I mean, they've got their four networks. They're already having enough trouble with the Oilers and the Flames sort of getting in each other's way on the Western network. How are they going to fit the Jets, for the sake of argument, where would they fit the Jets broadcast in? How are they going to do that? There's a real problem. It's really problematic for them to be able to show those games. Now, what TSN has done with the Canadians is they've created a sort of a sub-channel that they put the Canadian stuff on. Maybe TSN could consider doing that. But right now, Sportsnet is kind of jammed up at the end. The other thing is, for both Winnipeg and Quebec City, if they come into the league, they don't necessarily bring you a lot of new eyeballs on TV. People in Winnipeg are hockey fans. They've been watching no matter what. Mm-hmm. If you have your own team, will that bring that many more eyeballs to the TV? It'll bring some more to the TV, but certainly not a huge amount. You've already assumed the NHL is popular in Winnipeg. So in terms of making a lot more money for the league, I think it's marginal how much Winnipeg and Quebec will bring to the package.
Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, guys, maybe next time we'll be talking about a team in Winnipeg.
Here's hoping, Bruce.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Thanks, Bruce. That was excellent.
Yeah, that was great. Bruce is really...
Really, that was good.
Right on the ball good. When it comes to the broadcasting game, so we were really glad to have him on
check
the
out
air.
His columns in the Globe and Mail on Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
That's right.
Drew, I just wanted to throw in, too, that when you... We were talking about this before. We didn't get a chance to ask him, but we're assuming, too, that there might be some type of Jets package on MTS TV.
That's a rumor as
that's
well.
That's just... We don't have the answers for anybody about that.
Everything's speculative right now, but it's certainly...
As is a team returning.
And that's very true, Ezzy. And, of course, we'll get into some Jets talk probably in the final hour here today. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, some more of the Canucks, Blackhawks potential choke job. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Hosting the Legal Curve Hockey Show, and he's ready to get it going.
Or murder you. I'm not sure which. It's one or the other.
I've managed to alienate both of you with one fell swoop. Richie left his Facebook on. I caused a little ruckus. I was inappropriate on the air to Drew. I'm going to have to find some new friends.
Or a new radio show, at least.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:50 in the morning here.
Julia Hexall would take me?
Probably not.
She likes Richie better.
Let's just move along. Here we are on Sports Radio 1290.
Awkward.
Yeah, Ezzy, be quiet. We just heard from Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. Earlier, we heard from Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. In case you missed any of those, they're available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Let's continue with the Vancouver-Chicago series.
Vancouver Canucks versus the Chicago Blackhawks.
Prior to the Bruce Daubigan interview, Richie was referencing a quote that Jonathan Toews said, and here's the quote in its entirety. They're a beatable team, Jonathan Toews said. They have got weaknesses just like any other team. I think it is up to us to expose them, and we haven't done a good enough job of that. It's pretty simple. They're skilled, they like to make plays, and sometimes that leaves you in a vulnerable defensive position. So like I said, it's up to us to be better. Now, of course, that quote was uttered after Game 3 when the Blackhawks were down 3-0 to the Canucks. What have the Blackhawks been able to do to expose those weaknesses?
The best part of the quote was they're not exposing them, the Canucks, for what they really are, for what they are. I like they're not exposing them for what they are. That means you're calling them out. You're calling them out. And you're calling your own team out. And you know, it's messy, yes, putting your money where your mouth is.
And well, it's one thing to do it for to make it a 3-2 series. It's a whole separate issue.
I realize that, Drew, but it's a 1-8 matchup, and the Blackhawks aren't the team that they were last year. And this is in terms of the stats, Vancouver is the better team. Taves bought the fire, and I think another thing, Drew, Duncan Keith stepped up his game.
Yep.
He didn't have the best start to the series. He has been absolutely, utterly dominant in the past two games. He's been everywhere.
Defensively and offensively.
Everywhere. He has been the Norris Trophy winner he was last year.
Best skater on the ice.
Yeah, exactly. He has been the dominating defenseman he was with Drew Doughty in the Olympics. He's been so much better than any Canucks defenseman, it's not even close. And we also should talk about the fact that Nick Leddy, a defenseman they got last year for Cam Barker.
From Minnesota.
Yes.
Yeah.
First round pick with Kim Johnson.
Yeah.
Great wheels.
Salary
Great wheels.
Because Johnson was on the books for this year. Yeah, he has skated well. He's played with Duncan Keith, filled in admirably. He actually played with Keith prior to Seabrook's injury. It was a little switch they made. And so he's played well. The Hawks defense as a whole, you know, exclusive of John Scott, skates as well as any defense in the National Hockey League. And if the Canucks aren't going to be physical, if they're going to play a little bit of a skating game,
yeah,
aside from Raffy Torres running around like a chicken with his head cut off, if they're going to play a skating game, it's hard to score on the Hawks' defense if you're playing a skating game because they're good, they're smart, they can skate, and they can pass the puck.
It seems like everybody on the Blackhawks in the last couple games has been stepping up their game a little bit more. Do we have the quote?
Yeah, we have the quote.
Okay, right. This is the actual audio of Jonathan Toews after Game 3.
Now I think we're all working hard. We're on the same page, whether the plays that we draw up work or not. We're finding a way to expose them and force them to make mistakes, and we're getting opportunities. And the more you do that, the more chance you get, and eventually they're going to go in for you. So I think that's the only difference right now. Absolutely. We got confidence now compared to those first three games, and we just got to keep building off that.
It seems like everyone's...
The other quote is exposing for what they really
are. That's obviously a quote after...
But one thing you have to realize about Toews' comment is he has not backed down from that statement.
Why would he?
A lot of people backed down from the statements, and if you saw Ryan Johnson's interview after the second period, you know, he had said some things before the first game, and he obviously didn't want to give him anything to use as fire, you know, the Canucks. But I'm saying, Drew, Toews gave him something. He called out the Vancouver Canucks after Game 3. He called them out. That's calling them out.
Of course.
Exposing them for what they really are.
What does he have
and
to,
the Canucks,
why
the Canucks
would he back off him? What does he have to lose?
And the Canucks respond by laying two eggs.
Yeah, they lay down. They lay down. I mean, if they lose in Chicago tomorrow, they lose this series.
If they lose in Chicago tomorrow, they get into the Game 7 rule.
Where it's one game, anything can happen.
Not only that, you're playing seven games in the first round.
Right. Of course. Yep.
What's going to happen later on down the road?
They are laying down. This team is not mentally strong enough. I've never seen a hockey team that dominated the NHL all year that is as fragile as these guys are.
Andrew dominated the first three games. And now,
absolutely.
And now that Toews has come out with his comment, he's backed it up. And
they won the first three
games. Richie mentioned Duncan Keith.
They're troubling.
How good did a guy like Marian Hossa look in that fifth game?
Right, I think the biggest key we haven't even talked about yet. You know, losing Seabrook's huge. You know, the hit on Seabrook, that Torres hit Seabrook with a dirty hit, and I loved how Keith went at him. I loved that the next game, but you lose Seabrook, and you're down 3-0. You know, you say what Tave said, the Seabrook hit. I mean, like, and Keith standing up for him, and all those factors. But there's one big factor, and it probably is the biggest factor, and it's one name, Dave Boland.
You think he's been, I mean...
He has absolutely dominated
the
Sedins.
How does he come back after...
He has absolutely dominated the Sedins.
How does he come back after missing that much hockey and look like he's picking up from the Stanley Cup Finals last year?
People don't realize. People look at David Boland as a checking line center. In London, of the OHL, he was an offensively dominating player. He has great skills. He is a great two-way center. He's aggressive. And the Sedins have proven they can't do anything against him, at least in the sample that we've seen so far. And the Vancouver team, as we've talked about before, I don't love their third and fourth lines, especially from an offensive perspective. So if Boland is able to shut down the Sedins, the pressure lies on Kessler. And what's he done? He hasn't done anything yet. But also, Boland, as Jim Houston's mentioned on the telecast, gives them the ability to go Taves, Boland, Sharp as centers.
Those are three damn good centers.
And Richie, in games 4 and 5, when you're getting badly outplayed, such as the Vancouver Canucks were, that line of Rafi Torres, Max LaPierre, and Tanner Glass, they can do all the crashing and banging and headhunting they want, but if the Sedins are getting dominated physically and defensively by the Duncan Keith pairing, it doesn't matter. I mean, the Sedins have clearly... That team is fueled by their top two lines. They're not a one-line team. They're a two-line team as far as offense goes, and both those two lines have done nothing in the last two games.
Boland back brings this team from a two-line team to a three-line team. This is their lines right now. Boland, Frolik, and Bickle. A nice mix of speed, skill, tenacity. Kane, Taves, and Stahlberg. And Taves spoke about Stahlberg's ability to open some ice up for them because he's so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sharp, Hossa, and Smith.
Three pretty good lines. You're rolling out at them.
Different story when you didn't have that center before. That Boland line wouldn't look so good if you didn't have Boland there.
Who needs to be the leader for Vancouver?
Kessler, I think. I think Grind
Kessler.
That's
why I thought Kessler should have been the captain, because I think the Sedins, you know, I'm maybe in the minority in thinking that even when Mike Gillis signed the Sedins 2 years ago in the summer, that wasn't his first choice. I've always thought he had questions about the Sedins.
Will those questions manifest themselves if they bail out the next two games?
Well, if they bail out the next two games, yeah. I mean, if you bail out the next two games, if you're a one seed and you lose to the eighth seed, I don't care if they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. If you're a one seed dominating the league and you're playing an eighth seed and you're up 3-0 with two of the next four games at home, if there are four games, and you don't win one, then we're getting ahead of ourselves. But there's ramifications, and I think probably they'd probably start with Alain Vigneault. I still think, personally, that the Canucks do win this series, Drew. It's very hard to win four games in a row, especially against a good team.
Do they win in 6 or 7?
But what's happened...
I say 6.
You think they win in Chicago tomorrow?
I think so. I really do. I think that they're going to come out... I thought... And you know what's surprising? I thought that even though Game 4 was 7-2, I thought Game 5 was way worse. What I mean by that is because you followed a stinker up with another stinker
right.
at home.
Right.
I think that, and you know what? Going back to what
Game
Drew said,
Game 4 was tied 2-2 in the second period.
Going back to what Drew said, though, I have to agree with Drew. I think Vancouver will win Game 6, but if they don't win Game 6, I can't see them winning Game 7. I really can't.
I think they're too mentally weak. I think they are mentally weak. I think they're a defeatist team. They see the. Any sort of adversity that they face makes them curl up in a ball.
I see them more as this, Drew. I obviously picked them to win the Stanley. I picked them the beginning of the year. I picked Pittsburgh to win the Cup over Vancouver. That's with Crosby and Malkin. No, whether they come back, that's another story. But one thing I worry about, Drew, is if they do win this series, I think this series has said a lot about this team. Good Stanley. I don't know if there's a stat on it, and I'd love to know the stat. If there's ever been a Stanley Cup champion that's lost two games by a margin. Back-to-back by this kind of margin?
It's not even two games. It's four periods.
Yeah.
It's only four periods.
I don't know if I've seen that before.
What you have seen in the last four periods of hockey between Vancouver and Chicago can not be described in any other way besides stunning. Because Game 4 was anybody's game. It was 2-2 in that game. And Vancouver has done nothing but roll over. They've been outscored 10-0 in the last four periods of hockey. That's the best team in the NHL.
Yeah, it's shocking.
Who is the leader? Who's stepping up? Who's throwing something? Who's screaming in the dressing room? Who is manning up?
Looks to me like
who's taking the team on their back?
The only real leader on the team looks like right now. I mean, their leadership in the team looks like it's BX on the back end and Kessler up front.
They have to take the team on the back. They have to physically carry their team themselves.
There's a couple of things that have been exposed aside from that. You know, we're talking about the team and their willingness to win all that stuff. A couple of things I've noticed. Well, first of all, I've noticed this before, but Christian Eros awful defensively. He's awful defensively. Dan Hamus looks a step slower, maybe because of the concussions. He doesn't look as fast as he once did.
Yeah, he has no problem trying to concuss somebody else.
Yeah, that was a necessary hit. I thought so too.
That was dirty.
And
that was
a penalty call. They didn't need to call a penalty there, but. I thought that Erhoff is not good defensively. That's been Salah looks slow, and you know that he's ever really fast. Salah looks slow. Hamhus looks a step slower than usual. So those are all things on the defense that I worry a bit about. Again, there are a lot of strengths to this team, but when you're up three, when you're in the top seed in the conference, and you have to prove to the rest of the league that you're for real again. I mean. Mike Babcock's made comments about this team as well, about if they're for real or not.
Because they know that they can get in their heads.
So clearly people in the NHL think it's something different than the people outside the NHL.
If you can get into their heads, you might as well use all the skills you can and try and plant that seed of doubt there. I think the seed has grown. It's now a blooming plant. And I expect to see Chicago take advantage of it
for the next
few games.
Taves hasn't yet scored in the series, has he?
Taves has not scored.
I don't think he's scored in the series. I'm going to do a quick check before because... If you're Vancouver and you go, okay, we got to win, but Taves hasn't scored yet, John, and Taves hasn't scored, you worry. You know, it's like when you watch a basketball game and one guy's gone off, one guy hasn't. I mean, Taves in this series so far, I don't believe he has a goal. I think he has, I'm just checking quickly. And that's the factor. You have to worry about, is he going to go off? Taves has no goals. Kane has one. So say Taves and Kane decide to come to play.
Goodbye.
They've played better lately, but say they come to play. And Kane and Taves put some goals on the board. It's going to be tough. Sedins have to match it. And I'm interested to see. I'm looking very much forward to tomorrow's game.
We'll see it. You can hear it here live on Sports Radio 1290. Puck drop is 6:30 Winnipeg time. Pregame show at 5:30. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue breaking down series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Band I ever saw live. I was 10.
Winnipeg Arena?
1974.
That's very clever, 1974. That's funny. You make me laugh. Welcome back
to Tim Laugh.
1974.
And apparently as you got it on the delayed react, what are you on? Delay? Are you on an extra long delay there?
I'm on a human delay.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. In case you missed any of the program, it is available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and join Michael Remus in the Illegal Curve chat room at www.illegalcurve.com.
The Boston Bruins versus the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, apparently you have to be the road team to win in this series. Two games apiece.
Not surprised by the Bruins winning both games, by the way.
No, never mind. Boston's a better team than Montreal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I sort of...
I don't know about that.
Boston's
been a little bit overrated, in my opinion.
That may be fair. Montreal may be underrated a bit. They have controlled the play. They did control. They did, in important predictive categories in the regular season, Montreal was pretty good. But I think overall, Ezzy, we talked about a concern for Montreal at the beginning of the series, and that was their defense and their lack of speed on defense. And boy, there's a couple plays in that game the other night.
Brent Sopel looked bad. I'll admit that. I mean, lastly, I said
Roman
he didn't
Hammer,
look that
like,
bad.
I mean.
They're not playing with what they expected to be playing with defensively.
Remember, they're two. Boston's up 2-1 in the series if you take out the Chara game.
Right.
How good is Boston really if they can't beat the Habs twice in a row at home, though? That's what I'm saying. If they win the series,
One game's without Chara, is he?
Yeah, still, you play without still, though, the best of...
You lost two games at home? How good could you possibly be?
I think you can be quite good. I don't care if they lose two games in a row. If they win the next four, I don't give a damn if they lose the first two.
Chara is more important to Boston's cause than Pronger is to Philly because of the drop-off after Chara on that defense as opposed to the drop-off in Philly.
Are we going to talk about Andrew Ferentz?
No, whatever. He's good. I love it.
Yeah, I like it too.
You've been getting.
Drew, you're giving me the. Why are you giving me the finger right now?
Well, because I'll tell you what. You've been getting it. You're hearing it from the fans all game long. You know, no, but if you're offended by seeing a middle finger...
I was offended.
Well, then good. You should really go somewhere else and not watch sports. If you're offended by that, don't give me that nonsense.
I want an apology from Gary Bettman.
Do you know the things that the fans say to players during games in the penalty box and the... Are you like, they're just ruthless.
That's right. I think they make George Carlin blush, for God's sake.
That's right.
I mean, Andrew Ferentz, good for you. You've been hearing about it. You've been hearing from the fans all game. You score a goal, show them up.
He's a professional.
I mean, they don't advocate for it, Drew, but it was
yeah, you're advocating. You're advocating.
You're advocating, Drew.
I don't have a problem with it. You know what? I'll tell you what. If you're going to a hockey game and that's the most offensive thing that you see at the hockey game, it's probably a pretty good day.
I don't agree with
that. Most of the other games, you got guys trying to decapitate each other. You know, were you more offended by Rafi Torres and Dan Hamhuis trying to deliberately injure people?
Give credit to Kelly Rudy for calling Rafi Torres an embarrassment, saying it's sad what he was doing.
It is sad. He's just running around there like the only thing he can do is try and kill somebody. He looks like he wants to kill somebody.
He used to be a good player. I mean, he used to be a player able to score.
He looks like he's trying to kill somebody. This is why these guys are so. We're going off topic. We're going back to Vancouver somehow. But these guys just lose themselves. There's nobody in the dressing room in Vancouver say shape up or ship out.
If Rafi Torres keeps that up, Richie, he's going to get a punch to the face. Like he's been doing this for how many games in a row now?
Enough. The Spatrick Sopel combination has looked poor. You know, Hamrlik Wisniewski is your second pairing. Nothing to write home about. The Bruins right now have to take control of the series tonight, and I think that, you know, Gomez has gone back to being Gomez. Gomez haven't done much. Yeah, Camilleri is the best forward. Plekanec and Camilleri are clearly the best forwards on the team.
Yeah, Plekanec is playing. He's trying to shut them down.
Playing the shutdown game.
I've been happy with Kostitsyn. All right,
Plekanec is playing. You know, he plays the shutdown game. But Gomez, Gionta just haven't done it. Whether they're playing with Moen or Darsh, I mean, whoever it may be, they just don't create. For what they're being paid, it's a joke.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Montreal didn't have to acquire Scott Gomez, but they thought he'd be able to rekindle something. Yep. But he's definitely at the downside of his career, and certainly getting overpaid for it dramatically. So, but Montreal just doesn't have they don't have the depth that Boston has.
I mean, Drew, we're in a best of three here. I mean, it's anybody's game.
You're right.
I know Boston's won the last two, but I think it's anybody's game. Montreal.
Carey Price will have to steal it himself.
He's gonna have to be very good, Drew. And I think Montreal getting the should have been able to keep the lead 3-1 at home because they're a team that takes opportunities and takes them away. And blowing a lead is quite surprising. I see them being a team having a harder time coming back because of their lack of offense.
Yeah.
But having a 3-1 lead at home in game four, you know, game three is a must win for Boston. Game four is it's a big game.
They
could have
taken a stranglehold on it.
Yeah, and you're up 3-1 at home. Against Boston, pretty fragile, you know, a state of mind as far as I'm concerned, and you blow it, and then you know they're covered. Brent Sopel blowing the coverage on Chris Kelly for the fourth goal to go to overtime, then you know the lack of back checking and assignment coverage on the goal in overtime by Michael Ryder. There's been mistakes, Drew. This is a mistake game, and there have been a lot of mistakes by the team.
And they're not good enough to make mistakes.
Guys, you know, before the series started, we heard ad nauseum on TSN and CBC and every network pretty much about how Montreal's smallish forwards, we were going to kind of see that was going to be exposed. I actually felt like in that fourth game that it was exposed. Montreal is when guys like Gomez and Gionta, who are playing on your top line, well, I guess maybe more so... They have two lines, right? Boston has absolutely no problem physically dominating those guys. And Montreal is a score-by-committee team that doesn't have anybody that had more than, you know, 55 points or 60 points. Mm-hmm. I think Plekanec was just under 60, right? But anyways, the point being that I think Boston went into Montreal and physically dominated them. And that's obviously speaking to Chara.
But you know, it's an interesting point. You bring up Plekanec being the top scorer on the team. If you're going to put him in a defensive role, then you better get offense from other players. And I think, you know, Bergeron's picked up his game significantly. But to think, you know, Plekanec's matched up mostly against Krejci and Horton and Lucic. And Krejci, Horton, and Lucic, let's look at the production of those three players. Lucic has no points in four games. Krejci has one goal, and Horton has one goal. So that's two goals in combined 12 games. Plekanec's done his job.
Yeah.
The other players haven't.
Well, they're not that good.
But also what happens is when you have the depth, well, a guy like Bergeron picks it up, right? And then when Bergeron playing primarily with Brad Marchand, the speedster, and Mark Recchi, yeah. when Bergeron is opened up to play against other lines, you know, whether it be Halpern now back, whether it be Gomez, when you have a deep team, Drew, it's hard to match up against. You know, you're not matching up against, and we say it, but especially last year against Ovechkin, you know, when Semin wasn't doing anything, last year, Plekanec against Ovechkin's line.
Yeah.
When you're able to match up against that, who's going to beat you on Washington? And that's what they basically did. In Boston, it's a different situation.
Because they have so many rollouts. Right. I mean, that's what we've been saying about Boston all year. Is we don't know who's going to score that key goal for them, but we know they got a lot of guys who can score.
And the truth is, and you know it and I know it, is if they start to match Plekanec against Bergeron,
somebody else will take over.
Krejci goes off.
Of course. I mean, you can pick your poison. Yeah. And then that's the problem.
That's a matchup to watch out for. If Bergeron continues to be able to, because Bergeron's better than Gomez or Halpern, whoever he matches up against.
That's
better than them.
And his line is
better than their line. And if he is able to, you know, have free reign, and Bergeron's been very good in the series, Drew. They've increased his ice time, you know, from the beginning of the series. He's got 5 points in four games. He's only taken two minor penalties. And his winning faceoffs at 63.1%.
Well, that's incredible. That 63% is just, I mean, that's such a key. I mean, get the puck.
He's a key right now to me.
Yeah.
We're about to drop the puck here in Pittsburgh.
Well, let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to continue on in the Western Conference. We're going to go San Jose, Los Angeles. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Earlier this morning, we've heard from Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail and Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Both interviews will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe to it. Get the podcast automatically sent to your iPod and other sorts of MP3 listening device for those of you who may not have an iPod. I don't have an iPod.
Really?
I have an iRiver. It's about 5 years old.
That's a joke. There's such a thing as an iRiver.
Yeah,
it's like an iPod.
That's clever, but no, I have an iRiver.
An iLake.
I like my iRiver.
Ezzy, why are you BBMing during the show?
Better question is, who are you BBMing? Considering the only people you have on BBM are Richard and I.
I'm pretty sure he's actually BBMing us right now. I'm not even joking.
Yeah,
this is why you can't have a BlackBerry.
I can't BBM you. You've already deleted me.
But you're in a group right now, so you're backdooring your way into a conversation with me.
I was invited into a BBM group with you in it. Backdooring into BBM?
It's the Illegal Curve BBM group.
I already exited too.
It was too much. Let's go.
You didn't. It still says you're in there.
No, I left it.
He's out.
I'm out.
You're also BBMing during the show.
Let's go to San Jose, Los Angeles.
The San Jose Sharks versus the LA Kings.
Drew, forget that. Who do you think is going to win the election?
Mr. Ignatieff.
We already did this enough. I mean, we have listeners of all stripes. There's no point in alienating anybody.
Sorry.
You know, but you know what? It's worth pointing out, Richard.
Yeah.
Advance polls are open, so you can go vote today.
Mr. Ignatieff, I have no doubts about that.
You can go vote today. You might as well. Whatever party you want to go vote for, obviously you know where my allegiances lie.
If you had to pick between Jack Layton and Michael Ignatieff.
Mr. Ignatieff, I have no doubts about that.
Go vote is the point of this. Go vote. Find out where you can go vote right now. You know,
Drew, were you invited to Anita Neville's Passover Center?
Yeah, with Michael Ignatieff?
I actually wasn't, but I was...
I find that hard to believe.
Do you think he had the turkey?
I have no doubts about that.
All right,
Kings Sharks.
Hey now.
Kings Sharks, okay. 3-1 San Jose leads. Stunning collapse by the Los Angeles Kings in Game 3.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any other words for it besides...
In my opinion, that sucked.
I have a story for you. Richie, I was...
Is this about hockey, please?
Yes. I was shockingly invited to the Pollock Passover Seder, and during the Seder, the score is 4-0. Richie looked at me, and he's like, wow, you look like a genius right now picking the Kings. And I'm like, hold on. Then an hour later, it's 5-4 San Jose.
and all is right in the world again.
So you know what? L.A. got the victory, but I mean, they're done. I mean, this series is over in five, in my opinion, today.
Do you think it ends today?
Oh, yeah.
It's the late game tonight on TSN. Does it end today?
How can it not be?
Well, they didn't really have much of a showing, Drew, in game four there. So I would hesitate. I would guess that I would hazard to guess that the Sharks finish it off tonight.
What about Jonathan Quick? Has he been good enough?
Well, you know, you blow a 4-goal lead.
Yeah.
Has he been good enough? Not really. I don't love Quick. You know, it's funny, Drew, that the first few games, I mean, even that game they lost in overtime.
Yeah.
And game one they lost in overtime to Pavelski, right? So the truth is out of four games, two of them have been overtime, and the Kings have lost both, so there's been a fair amount of coin flip there. But again, you're the Kings, and you're up 4-0 in game three. You can at least win home. And
on home ice.
And you've been playing them. I've actually been quite surprised, Drew, I must say, quite surprised by L.A.'s been controlling the puck. More so, and I said that after game one, remember that, last weekend. I said LA's been controlling, and the stats bear it out. LA has been controlling the puck more than San Jose for the most part. In you know, when the game score is tied, and Grant hasn't been tied in a fair amount of the series, but even so, LA's played better than I thought. They win game two without Stoll, obviously without Kopitar, but they need to play a far more disciplined defensive game if they want to compete with San Jose, because San Jose has got firepower, and LA at the best of times has had trouble scoring this year, guys. People aren't Dustin Penner's back, but the team can't score, and the team hasn't been able to score all year. And that's with Kopitar. So without Kopitar, you can't get into scoring. You can't get into 6-5 games. Last game was a final 6-3.
Yeah.
If you're L.A., you can't get into those kind of games. You want more of a game one kind of style.
Yeah, when it's
a 3-2 final, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of game you want. You don't want high-scoring games.
You're right. You just can't match. I mean, look, you can match the firepower that Joe Thornton brings, but this isn't Joe Thornton's team anymore, and people have to realize that.
I know. So as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the playoffs, it's Joe Pavelski's team.
Absolutely, it's Joe Pavelski's team. It's Pavelski. It's
Couture.
Couture. I mean, these guys have just been. They are going to be
their best line, Drew, has been Couture, Healy, and Klo.
Of course. And these are the guys who are going to be the future of the San Jose. That's why the future in San Jose looks quite bright.
Oh, it does. Sure does.
I mean, especially when you can...
You know who's impressed me, by the way, on the back end there? Jason Demers.
Yeah, he's played very well.
Played aggressive.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well,
I love that defense. But
they needed guys to step up in the defense in the playoffs there.
I mean, you can look a little bit better against this LA team.
You're right.
They're playing against Detroit next round, which looks like it's going to happen if they win. They play Detroit. I mean, they play Detroit. 2-3 play each other.
Yeah. Detroit's winning that series.
Those 3-6 defensemen, the Demers, Vlasic, White, Wallin, that's a test. If Zetterberg comes back, then there's a real test there.
Well, I mean,
there's even a test about Boyle and Murray matching up against Datsuk's line. And Zetterberg and Datsuk might play together. Who knows? Many options, but that defense can look better against a team like LA. LA, I mean, you want to look at LA, and sure, there's many reasons why they lost, but their offense isn't there, Drew. It's not there.
No, but we didn't expect it to be there. So, especially when they get into these fire wagon types of games, they have no chance. We're going to do on the show for the last half an hour, starting after the next commercial break, we're going to open up the phone lines. We'll talk about the Detroit-Phoenix series. We'll talk about the return of the Jets, potentially. We'll talk about all that. So if you have a phone call you want to make on that, 780-1290, and you can start getting on that. But before we get to that, let's do a little bit on the Anaheim-Nashville series. And, of course, you know, we'll talk about anything you want in the playoffs. But Anaheim-Nashville,
it's been the best series, I think.
I think it has been the best series, and nobody's talking about it.
We didn't. We said. You know, in our playoff preview show, we said that might be one of the worst series.
No, I don't think we said
that. Never said that.
I think we said it was one of the most intriguing matchups.
I didn't say that.
Perry and Ryan against Weber and Suter.
Mm-hmm.
And that has proven to be very
Nashville's a boring, along with Phoenix, Nashville's a boring
team to
watch.
But it's been a high scoring series. But Anaheim's not, because they don't play a really structured system, and they play fire wagon a bit.
Yeah.
And it's been quite a fire wagon.
I felt like last night Nashville really, even though Anaheim was in it, and obviously they lost in overtime, I really felt like they brought Anaheim down to their game, and Anaheim had no energy. I really didn't think they had any energy. I really
Anaheim had two leads in the third period, as in the playoffs.
You got to keep those. You know who's been impressive for me? Who's impressed me on Nashville?
Team was
Jordan Tutu.
He really has played well.
He has played well. I mean, he set up that goal last night.
Beautiful
by Smithson.
Pass. Yeah.
I mean, he came down the wing. He took the shot. He got his own rebound from behind the net.
It was like
to Smithson.
Klein's goal yesterday made a nice pass on
the 2-on-1. He waited out the defenseman, flipped it over him, and Klein was standing, I think, in Emory. But
those might be nice plays, but you're not talking about Wayne Gretzky here. You're talking about guys that had 20 points in the regular season. If you can't shut down Jordan Tutu in the playoffs, you don't deserve to win. I'm sorry.
I didn't say anything. I said he's impressed me. There's nothing wrong with saying that he's impressed me.
There's a couple of guys on Nashville that impressed me quite a bit. I thought Joel Ward played an excellent game last night. You know, David Legwand's played it pretty solid. I know he got embarrassed last night.
But again,
you got a forward on defense there. Loses
his
stick.
It's tough.
TSN was comparing that goal to
Lemieux.
Okay. Can I go on a side quickly, because I have to go on a little bit of a rant here?
Please.
You're comparing Bobby Ryan going up against David Legwand, a forward with no defense experience.
Who lost the stick?
Lost the stick.
Well.
to Mario Lemieux, by the way, in the first round, to Mario Lemieux in the Stanley Cup Finals going up against a one-on-two against two defensemen, one of which is Mark Tenardi, one of the best stay-at-home defensemen of his time.
Yeah.
Let's not compare that.
No, but everything has to be compared to something else, so that's just the nature of the society we live in. Talking about Nashville players that have also impressed, Sergei Kostitsyn.
Really has. Beautiful passer.
Just has played... The freedom he looks like he's received since leaving Montreal has benefited his career immensely.
It needed to happen. I mean, both teams, I understand.
Yeah, there was a need for a split there. And, I mean, and it almost seems like if Nashville goes on to win this series, Mike Fisher winning that playoff, that draw in the offensive zone to set up the game-tying goal... could be making that trade well worth it.
I'm sorry.
By winning that series.
I think you guys are giving the Predators too much credit. I don't think the Ducks have played very well, and I don't think
that's Ray the reason is the Predators, as far as I'm concerned.
But, I mean, these guys have put together a couple games, and you're saying that Kostitsyn's impressed you? Okay. I mean,
in the five games that they played...
Let them didn't he?
Tied with Erat.
Yeah.
I mean, in the games...
By the way, doing this without Erat.
That's right. I know it's only 50 points, but he still played well. They're up 3-2. What are we supposed to do? Be criticizing them for something?
I'm just saying that they put together two wins.
They put together three wins. They're up 3-2.
I mean, I wouldn't. I think you're overestimating how good they are. But okay,
I don't think they're that good. I don't think they're going to be the Western Conference representative.
I think they get.
They're
not an easy out.
I picked Anaheim in the series in seven because I didn't think they were an easy out, and this game could still go seven. Now we must qualify our statements by saying if Jonas Hiller was in the series,
of course.
But he wasn't, and we knew he wasn't going to be.
Nashville gets swept in the next round.
Unfortunate. But I don't know if you sweep that team, Ezzy. They really make you beat them.
That's right. They play a responsible ski. That's
boring.
All.
They're boring.
Some would say boring.
Barry Trotz is a great coach. I love Barry Trotz, but that's a boring team.
They're boring.
But they have to be.
That's the only way they can succeed.
Yeah. I like entertainment. I like lots of excitement, Drew. You know I like my excitement.
It's interesting, though. I mean, the Perry Getzlaff, can we quickly talk about the Perry Getzlaff Ryan line?
It's been bad.
No, it hasn't.
It's been terrible.
I mean, when Perry's put up 8 points, four on even strength, three on the power play, and one shorthanded.
A lot of those goals came in those two wins, though.
And Bobby Ryan, obviously, they missed him in games 3 and 4. But Getzlaff, I mean, these guys are putting up points. I mean, Weber and Studer, I mean, they've proven they can't really shut them down. Slaney's put up some points. Koivu, Blake, I mean...
Jason Blake.
I think I'm surprised. If you were to tell me that Anaheim would score this much in the series, I would be surprised that Nashville would be up 3-2. Because Nashville would have to match them, and has matched them offensively.
You're right. Everybody expected that they'd have to win 2-1 games.
Yeah.
But
I thought for them to succeed, they'd have to win 2-1 games. They've done a really good job. Now, Anaheim's defense is nothing to write home about.
Right.
I mean, Cam Fowler making some bad decisions, and him playing with Beauchemin and then Lidman. And yeah, there's some issues there, obviously, especially their bottom pairing. I believe the Ducks, on the goal last night, the Ducks pairing on the ice was Sheldon Brookbank.
Ooh.
And it wasn't Lilja, it was...
Might as well put me on defense.
I'm forgetting that. They dressed seven defensemen yesterday, but it's Brookbank and their other defensemen.
Hey,
I'm forgetting who it is
right now.
Anyways,
George Perros.
Yeah, it was a poor defense combo and one that you have to shelter, and then they got, Smithson's line isn't a dominating line, but they scored.
Andy Sutton?
It wasn't Sutton.
So you're looking at the 2006-2007 roster.
He played a game for them in the playoffs.
It was Spezza. So.
Yeah. Anyways, you're right. I mean, we knew that was going to be their Achilles heel, and it's reared itself. We'll see if Nashville can finally win a playoff series tomorrow night on home ice.
You will. Yeah, that's a big game for them.
Anaheim in seven.
It's only going to be Anaheim in seven, or
Anaheim not at all,
Anaheim not at all. Exactly. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to throw open the phone lines. We'll talk about the return of the Jets. Anything you want about the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the morning, one half an hour left here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case
Drew,
What's
your age again?
It's actually like some 41. Or is that Blink-182? I thought it was Blink-182, but I think it was some 41 at the end, yeah.
Okay. What's your age again?
Welcome back. In case you missed any of the program, we heard from Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. We heard from Bruce Daubig of the Globe and Mail. It's time for open phones. So 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. We'll take your calls regarding anything playoff-related or the return of the NHL to Winnipeg.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Zach in Toronto, regular guest on this program. Welcome back to the show.
Hey now.
Hey now, guys.
How you doing, Zach? What's on your mind?
Just wanted to chime in and ask you guys, specifically Drew, because I know you're pretty close to it, what were your thoughts of the Cupcake Summit in Glendale this week?
Drew's experience with cupcakes is vast.
Yeah, I know a lot more about cupcakes than I do about anything about summits. But I thought it was I referred to it as a death rattle to a friend of mine who asked me about it, and I think that's what it was. It was a last ditch, desperate effort. They have to go through the charade that there's anything left for them to do. I mean, Goldwater's not going away. Hellsizer's not making this deal using any of his own money. I mean, unless Glendale is going to dip into their rainy day fund or some other absolutely... Not that they haven't been irresponsible enough as is, but, I mean, I don't know what's left. I don't know what's left at this point in time for them to do.
Well, guys, I got to tell you, the one thing that caught my eye when I was listening to this, I listened to the whole audio, and there was a point during there where Matthew Hulsizer said that if he wanted, he could buy the team and move it to Kansas City, which I thought was an odd thing to say because if he was trying to scare the Glendale City Council, the threat of relocation already exists because of Winnipeg. So I'm not really sure why he said that, but, I mean, do you guys think it's a possibility that he would potentially, if he can't get the concessions out of Glendale, that the NHL would let him move it to Kansas City?
No, I don't think he wants to own a team that he has to pay full value for.
I also don't think, Zach, that at this point with Trimmon and Thompson, that if Batman were to hand a team over to somebody else ahead of them as the next in line, there's a lot of repercussions there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Hulsizer wanted to be at that meeting, to be perfectly honest. At first he
left early. He had a plane to catch. If he's rich, doesn't he have a private plane?
You would think so. I mean, at first he didn't want to. At first, look, in fact, it's no coincidence that he just showed up in time for Game 4 in Phoenix. He hadn't been to any of the other.
Oh, that
games.
That was an edict from.
Of course, that was an edict.
You could tell that hat was just taken off the merchandise rack.
Yeah, of course.
Put this on, Matt. Come on, pretend like you care.
I know. I mean, he doesn't want to be there. He didn't want to be at the Cupcake Summit. I mean, he left early for God's sakes. It's not like it was like a 3-day long mediation session or something.
Drew, they ran out of cupcakes.
Well, that could explain why he wanted to leave. I'm pretty sure that's
it. Zach, I think this in reality, looking at this, you know, you see the day-to-day articles. I just look at it from a rational point of view, I think. And is there any reason for us to believe that anybody will come in at this point in time after 2 years to buy the team and not require the concessions? And so, Phoenix Business Journal comes out, which is...
It's a propaganda arm for the city of Glendale.
Exactly, Drew. And you say, list Jerry Colangelo. Well, Jerry Colangelo is a very popular man in Arizona. He's been aware of the situation for 2 years. He wouldn't suddenly come in with 3 days left. He would have had checked into everything and see if he wanted in. Nobody at this point in time is going to swoop in because financially it would be irresponsible on them. These guys are businessmen who want to make money. They know how to make money better than most people. I tell you how you make money.
Not buying this team.
Exactly. How you keep your money. So from a rational point of view, I just don't see there's any way anybody's going to buy the team and keep it there. And in that sense, I think we're just a matter of days away. I think we're a matter of the first round being completed here.
That's my timeline.
Time is running out.
Yeah, exactly. That's my timeline.
Is ticking.
Yes, yes, yes. We've all heard it enough. I mean, that's my timeline as far as I can tell. There's no reason for this to drag it out any longer. The longer you drag it out, the closer it gets to the Stanley Cup Finals, and you can't have it overshadow the Stanley Cup Finals.
You can't have it overshadow any games. It's going to be between the first and second round.
There's usually a day or two off between the first and second round. Yep. Make the announcement there. It's a one-day story nationally and internationally. It's a longer day story in Winnipeg, but guess what? Anything related to the word Phoenix is now a multi-day story involving multiple media outlets and platforms and everything else. Perfect opportunity to remind our listeners to check out Drama in the Desert.
Yes.
At www.illegalcurve.com. Updated multiple times per day.
By Dave Manuk.
Yes, by our good friend on Illegal Curve, Dave Manuk. Check it out. www.illegalcurve.com. Drama in the Desert. It is your must bookmark website right now.
It is, really is.
For finding out the latest news on that.
Dave goes article by article, author by author.
And it will be, required reading once.
Yes, that's right.
The team comes back.
Yes, it'll continue.
When?
Thanks for the call.
All right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate Take care, Zach. There you go.
Bye now.
780-1290.
Quickly, let me get in.
204-780-1290.
Let me get on the Brizgalov comment.
Yeah.
Much ado about nothing as far as I'm concerned. I think my biggest issue, and maybe I'm going to take a different angle on this than other people. I'm just going to tell the fans here in Winnipeg, if you're going to get the team, Brizgalov is not the kind of guy, at the salary he's going to be demanding, if you're a Winnipeg fan, forget the comments that he made, which are short-sighted and ignorant. I think that the issue is... Zach, are you there? I think that the big issue there is that you don't want him at that salary.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, you don't want him at that salary. You would never want him at that salary. Before he even said the comments, I would say, get stay away from him at the salary he's going to be demanding.
Well, Richie, an associate of ours told us that that Brizgalov once packed his bags before the series was over. So.
Yeah, he packed his bags once before a game six. Once before a game six, he packed his bags.
We have another
bags.
Caller on the line.
You got a caller on the line? Okay. Who do we got here? Hello?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I have a bone to pick with you guys. Not you, mostly, Andy, but Drew and Rich. I got a bone to pick with you guys.
Let's hear.
I have never heard two guys just hate on the Canadians as much as you guys do and give them absolutely no shot in the water to win this series. It's really angry at me. And to drive on a detour back to Winnipeg, I'm so angry I might dive off into the floodwaters beside me.
Hold on, caller. It's Kev. It's Kev.
It's our good friend Kevin.
I picked the Habs to win the series. What are you talking about?
That's why he wasn't hating on you.
Oh, okay.
Kevin, I will say before the series, I didn't give the Habs much of a shot. Now it's a best of three, so anything can happen. I still don't think they're going to win. I think there's too many holes. But I give them credit for what they've done. And if you listen to the show consistently, you know I'm as big of a Carey Price fan as there is. But I'm not really a fan, and I really love Subban, but not much else.
Kev, your cell phone's breaking up, so we're going to have to let you go. Drive safe as you're on your way back from Grand Forks.
Yeah,
I'll add you on BBM.
780-1290, area code 204-780-1290 if you want to talk about anything to do with the NHL playoffs, the return of the Jets, whatever you want. You know, Brizgalov's comments were laughable in that they were so ignorant.
Well, Drew, I mean, forget that. You still want him on the team for that, the ticket he's going to be asking for.
Well, I'll tell you what. He cost himself money with his performance in these playoffs.
Not even the performance of the playoffs, Drew. It's just he's not worth the money he's going to be asking for.
No, I mean...
If you're a Jets fan, you should be happy you didn't want to come here because you wouldn't want a GM to sign him anyways. Now you should be happy it's not even an option to make a mistake.
That's right. I mean, I just didn't understand what he was... His comments were just so bizarre.
Drew, you got another call coming in
here. I know.
Here.
We'll get it up in a second. We'll keep Drew's talking in the meantime.
His comments. In terms of other things, you know, the rumors about the name and I mean, I think everybody's unanimous in this room wanting it to be the Jets.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You're wearing a Jets hat, Richie. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I believe we have Dale from St. James on line one. Dale, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
I'm just working out my garage today. Just wanted to listen to your show. I was just curious what you guys think about Corey Schneider coming to Winnipeg if we get a team back, because he's a free agent as of July 1st. So.
You know what, Dale? I'm really happy you mentioned that. I actually mentioned this to a friend a few days ago, and the reason why I mentioned that, I'm a huge Corey Schneider fan. He has a familiarity with the MTS Center. He played 2 years here, obviously, for the Moose, as you remember, and a lot of people here in Winnipeg will obviously remember. And I'm obviously, you know, great minds think alike, because Brizgalov is now basically, eliminated any chance he's coming to Winnipeg. Yeah. So I think you're
especially at $4.5 million a year, and he'll probably go to $6 million.
Exactly. I think you're onto something there. Corey Schneider, great young goalie, lots of future potential. Will they let him go in Vancouver?
Let me quickly get in. Dale, Schneider's not a free agent after this season. He's a free agent after next season, but he's a UFA.
Oh, okay. I thought it was this July.
Dale, it's interesting qualification here. He's a free agent, but he's a UFA after next season. So is Luongo's contract tradable? Regardless of how he plays, I mean, if they go to the Cup, they're not trading Luongo. But if they don't, they probably could try to trade him. I don't think his contract is tradable. It's too long. So then you get into the issue of the Canucks possibly trading Schneider, especially if he's a pending UFA, because he won't want to re-sign there if he's going to be a free agent. Is that something that they should consider, considering that Schneider is 25 years old, wanting a starting job, and has proven to be pretty good? I think that's absolutely something they should consider. I think that's an interesting point that you bring up.
Sure, I think so, yeah.
And he's talented enough, and he's cheap enough. And I think that's the key there, Dale. How much
can he start? He earned his wings in Winnipeg,
There's a familiarity that Corey Schneider certainly has with Winnipeg, and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense on paper. It's a matter of if you can actually formulate the deal.
One qualification here, Dale, before we go to break. Remember that if the Jets come back, that Winnipeg gets a team, they will likely be in Vancouver's division. You wonder if Mike Gillis will trade a player within the division, especially a goaltender.
Sure, if he can get something for him, why not?
Well, there's a lot of hesitation.
And there's also one other thing. Let me toss another thing in there. Sometimes, Dale, teams, for example, they're teams are a little bit hesitant, like if you want to equate it, give analogy would be in baseball, John Farrell was the Red Sox pitching coach, and now he's the Jays manager, and they said part of the deal was that the Jays wouldn't claim any Boston players off waivers because Farrell knew them too well, and you wonder if Gillis will be hesitant to trade with
Heisinger, whoever's in charge of the Moose, because they have maybe even more knowledge about the player than he does.
That's right.
Right, yeah.
Dale, appreciate the call.
Hey, I guess maybe talk about after the break.
Sure.
About Team Mussolini coming back for one final year in Winnipeg.
We'll talk about that after the break. Good
call. Great.
Thanks, Dale.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Just before
I like how Dale's thinking about Schneider.
Yeah, before we get to break, a reminder, Game 6 of the Canucks-Blackhawks series tomorrow evening here on Sports Radio 1290.
Tampa just scored.
Tampa scored 1-0. Pre-game show starts at 5:30. Game puck drop is at 6:30. Can the Canucks man up to avoid having to go back to Vancouver for Game 7? Find out by listening to Sports Radio 1290 tomorrow evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment after these commercial messages. .48 Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. In case you missed any of the program earlier, we were joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, and we are joined by Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. All of the show will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and subscribe. Get it sent automatically to your iPod. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And we have a score update from Tampa Bay early, about 50 seconds to go or so in the first period. The Lightning are out to an early 2-0 lead over the Pittsburgh Penguins. I should say that game is in Pittsburgh, not Tampa Bay. My apologies. Richie, what did you see?
We talked about the keys to the series being the matchups, Drew, and then the domination by the Pittsburgh defense. Well, Orpik and Letang were on it for the first goal against the LeCavalier line, and the second goal was scored by the Stamkos line against Mihailuk and Martin. So there you go. I mean, that's the top two. That's Tampa Bay winning that matchup, and that might be enough for today. We'll see. But that's been a matchup dominated by Pittsburgh, especially at even strength. And I believe both goals were at even strength. So that's a dominating performance by Tampa.
Interesting point. A caller just called in while we were in the commercial break, and he asked a good question. You know, in Pittsburgh, they seem to be doing some sort of modified whiteout where a lot of people are wearing white. But the Lightning are wearing white,
Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So, looks like they're cheering for Tampa.
Yeah. And a question, potential, what is it? How does it relate to a Jets whiteout?
You mean compared to a whiteout?
No, not compared. But like, if the home team is wearing dark colors now, and and the fans are all dressed in white, which would be conceivably the road team's colors.
You know what? I like the home team wearing white. I used to think that I liked it when they switched it, but I think they should go back.
There was a couple years where it was unique because you never got to see your road jerseys, but it's time for the home team to be wearing white.
You know what they could do, guys? They could just make it so that, maybe 4 or 5 times a year the home team wears black, but not 41 times a year.
Every team has so many different jerseys. What are they? Each team trot out 6 jerseys?
No, the Anaheim jerseys yesterday. Still ugly.
Yeah, they really are ugly. 780-1290, 204-780-1290. If you want to get in just up against the wire about anything to do with the NHL playoffs or the return of the NHL to Winnipeg, what are you looking for in today's games? You got 4 games on tap today. The first one's obviously underway. What jumps out at you as potentially being something to watch for in the next in the games that are on today?
Things what we've talked about before, Drew. I mean, is Montreal going to be able to get any offense? Is Gomez and Gionta going to come to play? Because if they don't come to play, I don't think they have a chance to win. That's my question about that game. The late game, I wonder if LA has anything left. I wonder if their spirit's been crushed kind of by that blowing the lead in Game 3. And today's already been interesting in terms of the matchups between Tampa Bay's offense and Pittsburgh's defense. And then, of course, you look at the afternoon game, the Rangers. Are they able to create offense better than they have throughout the series? Can Gabrick start taking over? Can he take this game to the next level? That's the questions that I have.
Dale mentioned before the last commercial break, any chance you think Timu comes here to play one final year?
I don't think he comes here to play because I think he's settled in Anaheim, but I'd love to see him come through town with Anaheim.
Oh, he'll definitely come through.
And there'll be something special there when he comes back.
I'm trying to remember. I can't think of another player. I can't think of another player as beloved in a city, 10 years, 15 years after he already left the team. It's amazing the amount of people that cheer for Timu Solani and the impact that he had
on
the sports scene in Winnipeg.
We're all, Richie's a year younger than me, I'm a year younger than Drew, but we all remember
So you mean I'm not actually 35 years older than the both of you?
No, but...
Weird. That's weird.
The excitement that he created in his rookie year is something that, I've lived in Winnipeg my entire life, there's been nothing close to it. There's been absolutely nothing close to him scoring 76 goals and 132 points in his rookie year, breaking Bossy's record and all that, competing with McGillney and Joe Giugno in the beginning, but then
no,
McGillney...
him and McGillney tied.
McGillney wasn't a rookie. McGillney tied for the goal that year. And Giugno was a rookie.
Yeah.
And Timo Solani, he lived in River Heights there for a while, but he was such a...
Ezzy, that's not creepy at all.
Didn't talk about his dogs and his...
No, but you know, like, that year, he was so special... And he was so nice to the fans, and when young kids went up to him, Richie knows this because
there's a classic picture
on a legal curve right now. But you'd go up to him, and Timo Solani would sign your autograph, and he was such a nice guy. And since he's left, he's always said such good things about Winnipeg, and I would argue he might be the most popular athlete to ever play in Winnipag.
It's a fair argument.
I'm not going to disagree
with
him there.
Him and Bobby Hull.
Yeah.
If you want Howard Check is probably the top three.
Yeah, but Timu, I think, still has the love affair.
And Drew, he was only here for 2.5 years.
That's right. If you want to check out www.illegalcurve.com, there is a fabulous picture up there. You might have to search for a little bit of a young Richard Pollock.
And Adam Pollock.
Slightly chubbier sure. Richard Pollock there also. A little bit of a heifer there in your young age there. Meeting with Timo Solani, it's a fabulous picture.
I think it's a great one, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was always kind to everybody who came up, and he has stayed that way, and that's why he's easy to hope for. And it's amazing to me. I mean, he's just in terms of his play on the ice, he is unbelievable in that
pass.
But not only that, as he's
last
40
night?
Years old, and he has still his wheels. I mean, Mark Recchi's 41 years. These guys are older than 40. Chris Chelios, all those guys lost their wheels when they got older. Timo's kept his wheels. It's amazing.
But Richie, that pass that Solani made, are you telling me he doesn't want to go to the
nuts.
Stanley Cup Finals this year?
That was nuts.
But you know what also I find interesting? It seems like the commentariat, the guys who cover the game day in, day out, the Pierre LeBruns, the Elliot Friedmans, everybody like that, all the Bob McKenzies, they seem to be rooting for Timo also.
So, they kind of relate to the party about realizing how good he's been.
But they seem to be rooting for him because I think that says how well respected he is and how much of a nice guy he was across the board.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's really what it is. I mean, so when you see somebody like that, you can't help but root for them. Guys, you want to wrap it up with some cheers and jeers?
Do it, Drew.
Let's do it.
Cheers.
Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg.
This just came in through Leah Hextall on Twitter. I'm going to cheer Brett Hextall, who he's, I believe, a Brandon boy. He played for UND this year. He signed with the Coyotes, so maybe we'll see him in Winnipeg. So Brett Hextall, that's my cheer. Had a good season for UND this year.
Richie?
How's out of nowhere, Ezzy, that cheer? That's caught me off guard.
Richie's a little stunned by the cheer.
Hey, I follow Leah Hextall on Twitter. She just tweeted that.
At Leah Hextall.
I'm cheering just a passion of the fans. Winnipeg, I know people get, don't get up in arms, blah, blah, blah. I'm giving the fans of Winnipeg a cheer. They're so passionate about this happening, and that's everywhere. That's not just in Winnipeg. That's fans of the Jets everywhere.
Amen.
And I think that should be as a credit to how much that people want a team here and how much it matters. And, people say, oh, remember what it's like now. Phoenix feels the same way. I mean, I just can't compare the two. When you have a team like Phoenix, it's been 2 years. They've been a good playoff team. Nobody cared. Nobody went to the games. Nobody tried to support the team to show them that they wanted to keep them there. So I don't have, you do feel bad for the hardcore fans. But let's be real here. Talking two different. This is two different ballgames. It's apples and oranges as far as I'm concerned. So don't give me that. Don't give me that. I feel bad. It's enough. There's a real hockey fans here. The people are patting. They're already talking about the roster. Tell me if anybody in Phoenix, how many hardcore fans in Phoenix can tell you the third defenseman on the team. So give credit to the passion of the fans here, and it just seems like this is going to, people are ready to explode, and I hope it happens.
Very well said. It's interesting, along those lines, before I get to my cheer and jeer, a good friend of this program, Jonathan Wald, was at game four. No, he was at game four of the Habs.
Yeah,
he was at game four in Montreal, and he was wearing his Jets jersey, and he was said he was he had got no more than no less than 30 comments from people saying we want the Jets back, and apparently even a Go Jets Go chant went up at the Bell Center.
Nobody is against this. Everyone is happy that we're getting our team back because the way they left in 1995, they left in 96, but the announcement happened in 95. Everyone is supportive of it. We have great fans, passionate fans, and we reciprocate that, Drew. We're nice to other fans as well. We're not mean to other fans. So, you know, karma's coming back, right?
I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers by cheering, really, the Manitoba Moose. We don't know if we're going to see another Moose game back in Winnipeg. They're down 3-2 in the series. They're going to Cleveland for the last two games. If they win, great. We'll be there in the second round. We don't know if we're going to see them again here. But you can't overstate how important and how classy of an organization they are. And that if it wasn't for the way they went about it from top to bottom in their quest to get the NHL back here, it would never be even on the drawing board. So kudos to the Manitoba Moose. They've been terrific ambassadors for the city for the last 15 or so years, and it's important that they do get the credit that they deserve for everything they've done for hockey in Winnipeg.
Absolutely. Amen to that.
Okay, that's it for this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. A big thank you to Bruce Dowbiggin of the Globe and Mail. We encourage you to follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. This program will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe to it. Get it sent automatically to your iPod. Remember, Canucks, Blackhawks, Game 6 tomorrow here on Sports Radio 1290. Pre-game is at 5:30. Puck drop is at 6:30. Until next Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we wish you good night and good luck.